Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. We are live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game National Studios. We are presented by the Southern Bank of Tennessee, 4 o'clock on a Thursday, which means it's time for the TD Power Hour, where Teron Davenport joins us from ESPN. TD, how are you?
I am doing great, man, especially after listening to that last segment. You did a great job. There was a lot of tea kettle calling itself black, but definitely on point. Good job with it.
For the people on, what was that, Tuesday where Cam went 20-21. I can say I was not there today. You were. I saw that Cam threw some interceptions. So yeah. I want to just say this. Give us the context today surrounding how Cam looked, and then let's go over the week as a whole.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Both of those interceptions came. He was on the move, and he was going to the same side. So the first one, he was trying to get – so – Calvin Ridley had one of those, what they call transcontinental. I love when Coach Mack refers to them as that. But it was a transcontinental crossing route, right? So we're talking about 10 yards, building your way to 15 to 17 as you go across the field, right? So he's going from left by the numbers over, and you kind of hook up right there before the numbers on the other side, on the right side. And so Cameron, he was scrambling to his right, and he was kind of looking back, and it was kind of like a backside where you try to get it, squeeze it back in there, right? And he tried to squeeze it in there. Cody Barton, who, can we say this? I want to give him credit because he's a very savvy player. And I really like the way he's been able to read Cam Ward's eyes. And that led to two interceptions he had. But anyhow, he read his eyes. And he kind of took him to the football. And it was an easy, quick pick. And it was done with. Now, that was in 7-on-7. Low red zone, by the way. And so later on, they had another one. And I don't remember who the receiver was, but he was scrambling again, Cameron Ward to his right, and he tried to fit it back in backside, like throw it, but it was more of a throw across the body. So it was an ill-advised throw. It's one of those ones where he comes to the sideline, and it's one of those, what the, you know what, are you doing? One of those type. He tried to squeeze it in there. He couldn't, and I got to look up the DB's name, number 40. It's slipping my mind. Let me see if I could go to my notes real quick and look it up.
But here, you keep talking, I'll find number 40 for you.
Yeah, the DB picked it off. And so that's how the two interceptions happened. They were both bad plays. Look, the first one, I don't think it was a bad play as much as it's like, okay, you learn that you know, these guys are a lot smarter at this level, and you can't do that. So that's
Davion Ross.
Davion Ross, right, number 40. He had the interception. And it was one of those ones where, like, it was late in the play. I'm not even sure who it was intended to, but he threw it, like I said, back across his body, and these things happen. He said that, you know, after practice, he said that maybe he should have sidearmed it, and that might have allowed him to get the different torque on it that he needed to get it to the receiver, but nevertheless, those were the two interceptions.
If you were coaching Cam Ward today, because, again, these are teachable moments, but if you were coaching Cam Ward, what would you say about those ill-advised throws? Because, you know, there was a lot of talk when he was coming out about the fact that even though he didn't turn the ball over at Miami, scouts thought that there were some plays that he made that were turnover-worthy, you know, as far as the NFL was concerned. And yet, at the same time, part of this with Cam is that's kind of his ball player mentality is, okay, I threw that one pick, but I've got the talent to be able to go out there and make the special play. And oftentimes at Miami, he did. So if you were coaching Cam and you were watching the tape back of that throw, kind of what would you coach him? What would your advice be?
Yeah, and you know what? Let me flip it, actually. It was Ridley running the crosser on the Daylon Ross one. I went back and looked at my notes. It was Ridley running the crosser. Right on the first one that Cody Barton picked off, everything was covered, and Ward, he scrambled to his right and just kind of like was looking, and Barton saw him look backside to see if he could sneak one in, and that's how that happened. So I stand corrected on that. But the coaching points, honestly, on the first one where everything, like, first off, let me say this: the defense ruled today. if your name wasn't Bryce Oliver or Julius Chestnut, the defense ruled today. Bryce Oliver had 3 touchdowns. Chestnut had 2. But I'll say this. The Cody Barton, the first one, that's one of the ones where you say, okay, look, like everything's covered, just throw it away. And that's something that Cam Ward had did for the most part, right, up to that point. He just got a little greedy and tried to – and these are the things, and I know you went off on, hey, he thinks he's Brett Favre because he said – if you're a gunslinger, like you don't wait until your Brett Favre status to say you're a gunslinger. If you're a gunslinger, you're a gunslinger from early. You know what I mean? And so these are the things.
You got to pop out of mom like that, you know, Baker Mayfield style.
Like I'm not going to get into all that. But the thing is, if you're like, these are the things, if you're a guy who is a gunslinger, like there's give and take where it's like, you know what? That's kind of like a part of the experience. You hate to have the interceptions, but that interception could also be 1 or 2 touchdowns. Like that's just like some of the big plays that the guy makes. Like these are the negative consequences. So it's one of the things where you tell him, like, look, man, like, understand where to take your shots. We're in the red zone. We can't give up points. Live to see another play. At the very least, throw it away. Let's get a field goal. I'm not trying to coach that playmaker out of you, but you just got to play smart and know when to do it. That would be my conversation on the first one. The second one, hey, listen, these guys, you can't telegraph. Like, you can't – I know that's the read that you want, but sometimes it's not going to be there. And, again, if it's not there, throw it away or tuck it and run it. Like, let's get positive yards or, at the very least, have the next down with the same opportunity to make something happen as opposed to turning the football over.
How did you feel about Ward as the 3 days are concerned all into one big bucket?
Good job, actually. You know, I'm not going to say he was outstanding because I refuse to say that about anybody in OTAs or minicamp. Just like I won't say anybody's terrible, but I think he did a solid job. One of the really big things for me was how he would be able to respond to the kitchen sink being thrown at him. And yesterday, I mean, I'm talking about double gap blitzes, you know, interior gaps from the inside backers and then getting them to show and then drop back into coverage. I'm talking about safety coming off the edge. I'm talking about corner blitzes. There were some of those little games that they were playing up front, and I do want to get into that in the coordinated pass rush at some point with you. But, yeah, I think he did a good job of picking those things up, still making plays despite that happening. And there was one where he saw the blitz about to come, right? He checked out of it, and that was that deep throw to Calvin Ridley on the post. So that was a good thing. I think he's done a solid job of you know, distributing the football. It's very clear that he and Restrepo, they have that chemistry, and he's gone to him probably more than others. But the timing on the deep outbreaking routes – Ayo Manor. You see he and Gunnar Helm connecting on seams. I think all that's good. But he just has to work a little bit better on getting adjusted to the speed. Like he said, that's the big thing that he's adjusting to, right? And so, like, on his deep passes, he knows that he's learning that you can't put as much air on it, right? He has to be more disciplined with his eyes. The interception to Cody Barton, he didn't look off. That happened yesterday. He didn't look off the linebacker, right, to kind of move him and create some space. He just kind of looked where he was throwing it. So those types of things he has to get better at.
TD, where do you feel like Cam is in his development? You know, for example, going back to the gunslinger thing, when Patrick Mahomes was drafted, Andy Reid said, hey, I coach Brett Favre. So if I can coach Brett Favre, then I can coach a gunslinger. But he's not ready yet. And we know that Mahomes sat the bench, and we know that Borgonzi used that example as a learning experience for him about where, you know, making sure that there's a plan for the young quarterback. When it comes to Cam, where do you feel like he is in his development and his readiness to be on the field now that you've seen him in live competition, albeit without pads or anything like that? But just where do you feel like Cam is in his development?
Yeah, I think he's in the very early stages of his development. And that's why you're seeing, you know, the reps. You know, he'll get a set and then Levis will come in and then he'll get another set and then the other guy. You know what I mean? They understand that. I think he still has to – he's in that – it's kind of like a date, right? Like, you know, when you first go on a date with somebody with somebody and you're kind of like feeling that person out. Okay, like, what is this person like? Okay, what excites them? What you know, all of those types of things. That's what he's doing. Okay, what is his, what is the defense like? What, how quickly do they react? How much difference is the speed of the defensive backs? How quicker are these guys able to get in and rush me as a passer? That's all. It's a feeling out stage right now that he's in. And I think come training camp is going to be that once again. And when the pads go on, obviously they can't hit him, but you're able to be a little bit more physical up front and do some things to impact the quarterback. And I think he's in that situation. He's kind of like that baby. Like, you know, some people, like they have a young kid and they want to teach them to swim and they just throw him in the pool, right? And it, of course, they're not going to let the kid drown, but they throw the kid in the pool to see how they'll respond and just get that fear out of the way early. Now, in some cases, it causes a fear and you don't like water going forward. But, I mean, their hope is that being able to put him in uncomfortable situations will help him learn and adjust to the things to come.
If you were, now that you've seen him, if you were building out a plan for training camp, what would you need? What would he need to prove to you in training camp for you to feel comfortable that he is ready to be thrown out into the water, which would be, you know, a real NFL game where he can get popped on the road at Denver?
Yeah. Well, to throw him into the true water, I think there's a lot to see. But right now, I think he, throwing him in the water as far as like throwing the sink at him with all the different blitzes and stuff, that has to happen, and it has and has to continue. But to me, the main thing is just see him continue to be calm in those situations, not make the same mistake twice, right? So now we got to see, okay, the next time you are in a situation where you're trying to throw that curl route or that you know, that stick route, you got to be able to move that linebacker to his opposite side just a little bit so that way he can't swoop in and pick it off the way Cody Barton did. So it's those things, right? We know that he could throw the football. Like, everybody knows that. He could sling it. That's a given. But the little things, okay, knowing when to take your shots, when to take your risk, and when to just, hey, look, man, just throw it away and live to see another day. Those are all the things that he has to learn to do more consistently in order for me to say, hey, you know what, put him out there on September, was it September 10th?
Yeah. How did the other quarterbacks look?
Look, Will Levis, and I went up to Will after practice and said, man, like, you look pretty good. Like, I like some of the throws you made. You know, a lot of people have complained about his ability to recognize the blitz. Well, you know what? He did that. He canned it, and he took a deep shot to Bryce Oliver. And it was one of Bryce Oliver's three touchdowns today. And that's why I said, outside of Bryce Oliver and Julius Chestnut, the offense didn't do much. But I think Levis just has to continue to just maximize each rep he gets, right? And, you know, the customary Will Levis mistakes that we've seen, he can't afford to have those, right? If he wants to have any possibility to compete for the starting job. Now, we know he's not going to win it, but I think from Levis, what I've seen is a positive mindset. I've seen some really, really good throws that he's made, the willingness to go deep when need be, but he's also starting to check it down. Like, you're seeing that all of that happen. He has that pocket panic, and I don't know, you know, what Jordan Palmer, that training could do to fix that, but it, you know, the guy just has a way of unraveling when that pressure gets to him, and he'll do something and be like, I know I shouldn't have done it, and have the exact reason why he shouldn't have done it and what he should have done after the moment. But in the moment, he does the wrong thing.
TD is with us. 615-737-1025. We'll hit your phones for TD at the end of the hour. As we always do, a mini camp edition. Sacks. It's been a big topic. And the Titans think they may have the answer to getting more of them this upcoming season. We'll get into that with TD next. Stoneman and Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
What do you expect of him against double teams? Premier defensive tackles around the league.
Right. Well, look, is this, when you get a double team, and if you know how to work, how the four guys work up front, it's four against five. When you get the slide, all right, it's always either you work an edge or you work to split them. Because you got to understand this. Sometimes you have to split them and the other guy gets the one-on-one. If you don't split them, now it's a hole where a quarterback can escape. So, like I said, Jeff's going to win, and he has been double-teamed and won on double teams. But we have to do a better job up front rushing together, being four against five, all right, against their front, and then presenting certain packages to make it easier for him to win. Jeff's going to win against anybody. Jeff's a dominant football player. Every team in the National Football League would love to have 98 line up on it.
There you go. That was Denard Wilson yesterday. TD with us for the TD Power Hour. So TD, double teams and sacks have been a big topic of discussion the last couple of days. Simmons getting double teamed. And then, of course, you know, are the Titans going to end up getting more sacks? It's a team effort, so on and so forth. I know you want to weigh in on this, so floor's yours.
Yeah, so it's not just double teams and it's not just sacks, so to speak. Like, they need to, well, it is sacks. It's not just double teams. I'll put it that way. And you love that quote. You got to look at what he's saying, though, right? Because so what happens is you see, and it's not just Simmons getting double teamed, right? There's time Sweat gets double teamed also because he's just the fastest way from between two things is a direct line, right? So obviously the most concern, and this is why you see guards getting paid more and why you see interior defensive linemen getting paid more, the most concern is the pocket being collapsed up the middle, right? And so when they double-team Sweat, who has a bull rush that is really good when he uses it, Simmons is getting single-team, like one-on-one, and he's not beating that as much, right? And so when you say this whole thing about the double-team, saying, hey, Simmons is doing everything he has to, and whoever's getting the one-on-one isn't, no, it's overall. There are both guys getting one-on-one or double covers, and they have to beat the one-on-ones. It's not just, you know, the guys when Simmons is getting it. So you have that. But also, you know, you had this question about, hey, you know, where are they going to get the sacks? Like, how are they just doing meetings? And you talked about the stunts.
Meetings.
And you talked about the double teams. Well, here's the deal. There's a focus on a coordinated pass rush. Now, understand this. I'm not saying – this is going to work. I'm just telling you their process. So please don't say, hey, you know, I'm not defending anything. I'm just explaining what's going on. So I talked to Ben Bloom, right? And the first thing he told me when I said, okay, how can you guys get it to the point where you could win with four, sometimes five, but more with four like the Eagles did? How do you get to that point? And what he said is you got to win these rushes individually, but at the end of the day, the four-man rush will have the most success with the guys that rush together, the coordinated pass rush. There are six rush lanes technically. Each tackle has a lane outside of them. There's a lane outside each guard. There's a lane on each side of the center. That's six, and there are four rushers. So our ability to win are individual rushes, but at the same time rush together with being on the same page of who's where and what's my responsibility within the four-man rush, whether it's a straight rush or a game, that's really how you have the most success. Rushing the passer and generating more sacks. So it's winning individually, the technique, and then rushing together, right? So give you a good example because this happens to the Titans all the time, and that's why I've asked multiple guys, Draymond Jones, Ben Bloom, Tracy Rocker, Denard Wilson, hey, how can you guys get it to where these pressures that you're getting are turning into sacks? Because so many times when you watch and you look at the Drake May game where he rushed for like 90-something, right? A good 30 to 40 of that should have been negative yards. But guess what happened? They didn't finish the deal. They ran the arc too deep. Drake May was able to step up and you know, as the pocket was getting collapsed, he was able to go to the space that was vacated by the edge rusher running too deep. And that left an open passing lane. So as an edge rusher, you got to know not to run the arc too deep and create a back door for the quarterback to slip out of. But that happened a lot last year, a lot of these quarterback scrambles. So that's why the focus is on a coordinated pass rush. That's the focus where everybody understands, okay, you know what? I can't run it too deep because I know Sweat is pushing the pocket, but at the same time, Sweat has to understand he got to push the pocket to flush that quarterback into the edge rusher that's rushing. But guess what? If he's not winning his one-on-one, he's flushing the quarterback to an empty space. So these are the things that has to happen. And again, I'm not saying that this is what – I'm not saying they're going to all of a sudden become a high sack team. I'm just telling you exactly what they're explaining to me. And so when I talked to Jeffrey Simmons about that yesterday, he said the exact same thing. We got to be disciplined in our pass rush lanes and understand that we all have an individual job. And if we collectively do those jobs, i.e. coordinated pass rush, we'll be fine. But when we don't do the job, whether it's, you know, one of the guys on the interior getting washed away and allowing the quarterback to step up and sneak through and run that way, or if it's one of the guys on the edge running too deep, allowing the quarterback to backdoor out of the pocket. That's what I want you to understand. So, yeah, I know it sounds dumb and you hate hearing them say that meetings. Things like that, but if you don't have – and it's almost like – like it's almost like you're purposely avoiding a point. I mean, you got to have meetings in order to get something in order. But you also you made a good point about Danico Autry, and I was on the same page with you about like they cannot let Danico Autry go. But let me tell you this: they made offers to him. Danico Autry wanted to go to the Texans. He wanted to go to Houston. So, I mean, yeah, technically they let him go, but he left. Also, you got to look at it that way too. And when you have – and this is why I think Draymond Jones is a guy that – I'm not saying he's going to get 10, 11 sacks. But I think this is why they went after him. Because you look – and you talked about it earlier when you were going through the batting lineup and you made the Chipper Jones. Now, Kenny Lofton was a better leadoff hitter than Marquise Grissom. But we're not going to get into all that. But you made the example of, like, the lineup itself. And you're right, right? Because when Danico Autry was there, a lot of times if you look, like, he was the shoot man. Like, he was shoot – inside, and Simmons would loop out and then around to go get the sack, right? Danico Autry, I'm not going to say he made Jeffrey Simmons, but he helped Jeffrey Simmons a lot because of his pass rushing prowess and their ability to just – because they had the liberty to where they wanted to run a game or a twist. They had the liberty to do it, even if it wasn't called. But here's the kicker, though. The two of them were on the same page to the point where they could just look at each other, and they knew, okay, you shoot, I'm a loop, or vice versa. Not having Danico Autry is definitely a bad thing for Jeffrey Simmons. But guess what? When you're looked upon, you know, and people say, hey, you're a top 10 D tackle, you got to overcome it, right? And so the double teams, when they come his way, as Denard Wilson said in the quote that you love, you got to split them, right? Because the least you could do, you split it. The double team, if you split that, you're not giving the quarterback a lane to rush through. So he can't step up in the pocket as much. I'm not saying if you collapse the pocket and go get him, hey, that's doing your job to the fullest. But the least you could do is split it so that way when that quarterback tries to step up, he doesn't have room to step up. And that will allow the edge defender to get him.
I don't disagree that the coordinated pass rush has to happen and rush lane integrity is important. I just don't think that they have, in this case, I don't think it's an X's and O's issue as much as I think it is they just don't have the players to get the sacks.
Oh, no. And look, having the players to get the sacks is very important. And honestly, that's, again, why losing Danico Autry is a big problem. But you know what? If you don't have that guy, that's just like if you don't have you know what? Za'Darius Smith is out. Like, I have no clue why they haven't grabbed him. You know, I think that's something that should have absolutely happened. And them not doing it, I think, is a mistake. But you're right. You need the players in order to, like, players are going to supersede scheme. You know what I mean? And right now, they don't have the collection of players to do that.
This is just an opinion. I wonder if the front office is operating under a different timeline than the coaching staff, where the coaching staff is operating under a we need to win now to save our jobs, and the front office is operating under a it's a rebuilding year and we're going to have to take our lumps, but we don't want to spend the money on Za'Darius Smith because we want to save that money so we can spend it next year.
I don't know. Next year on who? Right? And last time I checked, like, this was – It's a draft, develop, retain organization, right?
Sure.
That is going to be not liberal, but like selective in the free agent process. You know what I mean? So I don't know.
By the way, I just want to say, in the 1995 World Series, Marquise Grissom hit 360. Kenny Lofton hit 200.
Yeah, they were older. I think Kenny Lofton is better. I always liked Grissom, though, even when he was an expo. That's when I liked him. He and Delino DeShields.
So, but it should be noted that when the Indians went back to the World Series in 97, Marquise Grissom was on that team. He was the starting center fielder, and Lofton was in Atlanta.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Crazy. I loved Grissom. And Grissom with the Expos, like the Braves got him towards the very end of his prime, but Grissom with the Expos was
with Larry
tenacious.
Walker, too. And yeah,
Will Cordero was on that team. I mean, they were freaking stacked. Mm-hmm. And
Andres,
nobody
the
knew
big
it.
Cat, Andres Galarraga.
Galarraga was on that team.
Yeah.
I mean, they were freaking stacked back in the day. Okay, more with TD. And we talked about Cam Ward. We talked about the pass rush. What about just the just an overall feel for how guys are doing, whose stock is up, whose stock's down? We'll get into that with TD. We'll do that next year. TD Power Hour. And, of course, we'll hit your phones at the end of the hour. 615-737-1025. Stillman & Company, 1025-106 for the game. There you go. That was Brian Callahan earlier this week. So, TD, I'm going to ask you this question. Do you sense this year, now that the offseason program is behind us, mini camp is behind us, and it's really training camp, the start of the season, do you sense any difference from Brian Callahan from last year to this year?
He seems to be a little bit more, I don't want to say confident, but convicted in his approach, I guess you could say. The way that they went and they did a lot of self-scouting and self-evaluation, and given how bad it was last year, like that had to have been a lot. But I think he's very confident in what they've put together as far as the program that focuses on minimizing the different things that just murdered them last year, self-inflicted negatives, mental errors, like it ties hand in hand.
Do you think Callahan – he talked about having more urgency with the coaching staff. Do you think this season, when they really get into training camp and spots have to get determined, do you think we'll see a meaner Callahan than we saw last year?
I don't know, because from what I understand, behind closed doors, like, he has the jerk in him. You know, so maybe we'll see it on the surface a little bit more, like on the practice field. I don't know. That's a tough call for me to say.
Okay, whose stock, you know, through the mini camp and offseason program, who has impressed you on the team, you know, that you looked at and you said, hey, man, this guy, he looked pretty good. I'm keeping an eye on him in training camp.
Cody Barton, very much so, just because, like I said earlier, his intelligence, like, and his awareness, I guess you could say. And even further, I don't know if you saw the mic'd up where he was going over things with David Benda. But, like, this dude he's a coach on the field and then even off the field. And I was watching him today. He was talking to James Williams, actually. And I was watching him, and, like, when they got off the field and you see him just, like, you know, telling – you see him making gestures and directing them. And then it was pretty interesting. Another time they were doing the – it was full – it was, like, half field. They had to board the negative 45 at their own 45, the offense did. And – he was not in the game, but I saw the linebackers just kind of like come up and they were standing over those interior gaps. And you hear him like, hey, make sure you get your depth. Make sure you get your depth. And here it was, they were showing blitz, but they dropped, right? And they dropped into the passing lane that the quarterback wanted to go to. So things like that, I think, are pretty cool to watch. Cody Barton, I think, is a pretty – under-the-radar signing that I think may have some good dividends for him.
Now, on the other side of it, who were you maybe wanting to see a little bit more from or want to see more from when camp starts?
That's a good question. Want to see more from, I mean, you could easily say any of the offensive linemen, but because that all is different, you know, once the pads come on. Who would I want to see a little
bit? Unless you're Dillard. That's bad with the pads off.
Yeah, I had a coach, he used to joke with guys like Diller, and he said, somebody better go see the wizard and get some heart.
Yep.
That's what he used to say. Dang, somebody I would want to see more out of. I mean, it's honestly units. Like, I want to see more out of the D-line. I want to see more out of the linebackers. I want to see more out of the offensive line. So I'll do it that way.
Where are you on the receivers? Because we know that there are a lot of different guys, and they do a lot of different things. You said Bryce Oliver had three touchdowns today. I've been a big believer that, again, you know, when it comes to the Restrepo thing, I just don't see him making the team over Bryce Oliver because Bryce Oliver, you know, probably plays a little bit more special teams. And, you know, I think, again, I know it's just camp and it was camp last year. I think Bryce Oliver's pretty good. And so I do wonder, you know, now that we've seen Io Manor and DK and Van Jefferson, and how do you kind of see the receiver room right now?
Oh, yeah, Oliver had a good day today. I think you're going to start to see them dropped into boxes, right, where it'll be split, right? And I think when you look at Io Manor, you're going to see him continue to make a move for that X position. When I look at the receivers, there's a lot of questions, right? Okay, well, what do you do with Van Jefferson? He looks good, right? So, okay, well, you know, how are you going to move him around? How are you going to move Calvin Ridley around? Like, what boxes are these guys going to fall into? And I know you want the cross training and have multiple positions, but you also want to be able to have them specialize in something too. So it's a tough call. Tyler Lockett. There you go. You say someone I want to see more from, Tyler Lockett. We didn't get to see him involved in 7-on-7 or team period. So that would be one rather than the groups. I just want to see how it falls into place for them because, yeah, they have a long list of guys. And even like James Prochet had a pretty good day yesterday. So it's like, okay, who's going to become the one that consistently make plays and the one that you're like, hey, they can't afford to not have him on the roster.
How do you feel about Restrepo's chances? You talked about he and Cam are always kind of dialed up together, and yet it's a very crowded room. How do you feel about his chances?
Yeah, I think he has a chance like all of the other guys, but the odds are stacked against him. What are you going to do with him on special teams, right? Are you going to have him as a gunner? Are you they have him as a punt returner, but you know, he's a guy that I would trust to secure the catch, but he's not someone I think is going to get you much as far as like the actual return. So where else can he provide value to have him on the roster? But here's the problem that I think they're going to face. I don't know that they could push him to the practice squad. Cause now you're sitting at, okay, well, yeah. Whereas I think a Bryce Oliver is someone that you could push to the practice squad. So it's like a tough call. And that's not to say that those guys are competing against each other, because I don't think they are. You know, when you look at it from a micro perspective, macro, yeah, they're all receivers. But when you look at it from a micro, it's like, okay, well, who's going to be the best slot options for this team? Who's going to be the best X options? I don't know.
And the other thing, too, you brought up the punt return thing. Like, let's say that slot – that backup slot punt returner position comes down to Mason Kinsey and Xavier Restrepo. Who's to say that Restrepo's a better punt returner than Kinsey? Because yeah. Kinsey is a solid punt returner, even if Restrepo's a better receiver, but you're not going to use him ahead of Tyler Lockett in the slot, then I would almost think, okay, well, if Kinsey ends up being the better punt returner, you probably take Kinsey as opposed to Restrepo.
Well, I think that's why you look at Chimere DK, and he's the wrench in both of their game, Mason Kinsey and Xavier Restrepo, because he is that guy that could play the slot. And guess what? You could run those deep over routes and vertical stuff because he is a fast receiver. So you could use him in that perspective. But at the same time, Kinsey and Restrepo are better like in the phone booth type, like across the middle and you know, that 10 to 15 yard range. But DK is probably going to be a better option in the return game. So to me, having Chimere DK on the roster, that hurts both of those guys more than most other receiving options.
All right, your phones for TD are next. Hit them up right now, 615-737-1025, the mini camp edition of the TD Power Hour, Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Stillman & Company, TD Power Hour, Teron Davenport with us, the mini camp edition. TD, do you have a thought or do you want to go right to the people?
No, we can go to the people. I wish Wretched Scrivener or whoever it is, I wish they would call in, but they probably won't because they're hiding behind some random name. But anyhow.
From the YouTube chat?
Yeah. He always. Oh. Yeah. I'll just stop it.
Dylan is going to kick us off here on the TD Power Hour phone line driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com. Dylan, go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, TD. Yeah, you're the best. So you made a comment, it may have been last week or earlier this week, about how someone had asked about Gunnar Helm, and you said that you hadn't really noticed him. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was kind of an interesting comment. You know, I know he was big in Texas and all that, but has that changed? And when you say that, do you mean he hasn't really been making plays or hasn't been standing out in a certain way? So just if you could just talk a little bit about that, please. I don't hang up listening. Thank you.
Yeah, Dylan, I appreciate it. I'm definitely not the best, but, hey, that's the goal. But I'm glad you mentioned that because Gunnar Helm has actually had a solid week. He had one of those catches. He caught a seam route from Cam Ward, and it was just over the linebacker's shoulder, great concentration on it. And he caught that one. He caught a corner route. I believe it was from Levis. He's actually started to show up. And I think it's just one of those things, like, as you get into yourself, like, more comfortable and confident as you go along, I think you perform better. And that's what you're starting to see. It's going to be fun watching that tight end group. I know it's one that a lot of people feel is, like, bottom of the basement. But I think you could have a good collection of guys. So, Gunnar Helm, yes, he started to show up. I even like, you know, there's some times, actually, yeah, they had him isolated backside, and they hit him on a backside route, and he was able to make the catch there. So it's going to be cool seeing how they use him and how they position him and what they do. He's definitely a guy I think that could have an impact.
I think tight end room stinks. Gino says.
it's not good. It's not good. Not at all.
Gino says, overall, TD, how do the running backs look? And specifically, Khalil Mullings.
Khalil Mullings, yeah.
Any rotation in short yardage or red zone work, he is a hard worker, a hard-nosed runner, and I believe that his agility was underrated at Michigan.
Yeah, I think he's someone that will start to get more work. Julius Chestnut actually had a pretty good day in red zone. He had a one-hander where he kind of warded off the linebacker and caught it with one hand, and then he caught a dump off. Like on like a pick play as well for touchdowns. So he's been kind of like that guy in addition to Pollard and Spears. But I think overall, and I also say Mullen, he didn't practice much initially, but we got to see him involved in practice more today. So overall, it's another one of those things where it's like, okay, you got to see the pads on to really see like how everything is going to be. But I think they have a good group, and it's more or less going to be between – Mullins and Chestnut to who settles down into that third running back role. But the thing you got to remember is Mullins, a former linebacker, so you get that versatility, right, on special teams. And we know when you're talking about the third running back, you got to look at other ways that they could contribute.
One texter, Jonathan, says, TD, do you think Jeffrey Simmons has lost the fan base?
I think it's more split. It's more split. Look, there's nothing wrong with having expectations, right? Let's be honest. Like, he hasn't performed to the level that you would expect from him, right? He needs to get more sacks, which, by the way, he's even admitted himself that he needs to get more sacks. I think he needs to use better – like, he needs to see things off the field from a more optical perspective. As far as like, okay, you know what? OTAs, I need to be there because optically I know this isn't good. Okay, yeah, I could get into minicamp and pick up where we left off and hit the ground running, but optically it doesn't look good, right? He needs to have that better understanding. I think, and it's a shame because it's kind of like a gift and a curse. Right? Because you ask him, hey, what is going on? Why aren't you getting enough sacks? Okay, well, you know what? I'm being double teamed. And when I take on the double team, I need the other guy to win. But also, I got to win my one-on-ones when it slides to sweat, which he has said multiple times. So I think you know, there's he just has to – bottom line, I put it this way. Bottom line, he's got to play better and be more impactful.
That's like my buddy that played in the big league said that all they used to talk about in the minor leagues was if you don't like something, play better. So mm-hmm. you don't like the food they're feeding you in single A and you want to go to triple A where they got better food, play
get
better.
Up to, yeah, yeah.
You know, you want to fly charter flights and you want to stay in nice hotels and you want to make a bunch of money, go play better. They'll put you in the big leagues. And that is, I guess, to a certain extent, kind of the deal around here. One texter says, hey, TD, how's the secondary looking? Any young guys that can emerge similarly to Jarvis Brownlee?
Marcus Harris is sticky, man. I like him. He's a shorter corner, but he is always in the receiver's pocket. Jamari Harris had a nice back. Had a nice pass breakup today. He's the guy, that undrafted free agent from Iowa, who they paid, you know, pretty well. So he has a good shot. Outside of that, DB-wise or corner-wise, I haven't really, you know, you're not seeing Daryl Baker – isn't out there. By the way, I saw Snead today. Not in uniform, but I saw him, you know, in street clothes. He and his son were standing on the patio as we were waiting for Cam Ward to speak, and he went back inside. So I did see Snead. But, I mean, look, there's still a lot to be desired from Jarvis Brownlee Jr. He's working on not being as grabby. He did get beat by Alec Iomanner, and he grabbed him.
Oh, that was such – I mean, yeah. I did like the whole, like, yeah. throw the flag, you know, yeah. when I saw
and
that.
He ran through the contact, right, and still made the catch to his credit. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot that has to happen. I think, you know, as you said earlier when you were like, yo, there's a lot of who when you're looking in the secondary. Because I've caught myself looking at the roster a few times. I've kind of learned – who's who a little bit more now, but even like earlier, you know, I'm like number 40, he had the interception. Who the heck was it? You know what I mean?
Speaking of Snead, when do you think we'll see him in Titan clothes and not street clothes?
Man, listen, that one right there is like, that's a lost cause. I don't know when. I have no clue when we'll see him. And, you know, it's unfortunate because, like, you got – At least sometimes you can say, okay, well, you know what? The guy's hurt, but we know off the field there's nothing going on. Or you can say, okay, the guy has something he's working through off the field, but once he works through that, we know he'll be here. You can't say that as a coach. You can't say that about, like, it's double jeopardy kind of speak. So I don't know when to tell you that he will be back. I wanted to ask about that today, but I just said I'll just leave it alone and we'll see what happens. Training camp. And kind of take it from there.
I was talking to somebody who, I'll just say, their opinion probably matters a little bit more than yours and I's when it comes to this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I was like, you know what? You guys should just release Snead if this commissioner suspends him and void the guaranteed money. And I was trying to see if there was going to be like a direction one way or another, and there wasn't. You know, like I was going to see if there was going to be like, oh, we couldn't do that, Jared, or oh, we couldn't this, or we couldn't whatever. And again, you know, I'm just saying this guy's opinion matters just a little bit more than ours. But I definitely think if the commissioner suspends him, they need to get out of that contract, not because of the off the field stuff. But it's almost like using the off the field stuff as an excuse right, to get out of the money that's due to him.
Yeah, the back door. No, I mean, in a perfect world, they'll be able to like, you know, get out of that and get a Jair Alexander. You know what I mean? But.
Jalen.
Yeah, that one's an interesting one to me. Just like Alexander, there's drawbacks, you know, Alexander with the health. But, yeah, I'm – so let's say it this way. Get a veteran impact corner.
Sure.
Right? At a, what you would imagine would be a bit of a lesser price.
I would just say this. On the Alexander-Ramsey front, I think they're both a little crazy in their own right.
Yes.
But I have more faith in Jalen to show up on a Sunday and play than I do in Alexander.
Yeah, Alex, he's had some injury issues.
That's what the Packers was weird.
Yeah, he's had some. Like, look, I don't agree with you on the Jalen over Alexander, but I understand where you're coming from because there's definitely been some injury issues and stuff like that.
Rob is up next here. Rob, thank you for calling. You're on with TD. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank y'all. Hey, TD, I wanted to ask you a question about the offensive line. Pretty straightforward.
Sure.
Do you think we'll be good, decent, or only serviceable this year?
I think decent, Rob, is the better way to look at it. Dan Moore, like, it really is all – it's on Dan Moore Jr.'s it's on his shoulders. You know, that one sack that Simmons had yesterday, he ran by Dan Moore like Dan Moore wasn't on the field, which, by the way, he left early yesterday and wasn't on the field today. But, yeah, I'll go with decent. I there's nothing you could tell me right now to make me say – more than decent. And again, we haven't seen him in pads. We'll see, especially those joint practices. That's going to be a good opportunity to get a better gauge.
TD, good to see you as always. And I know you're going to probably at some point take a little time off here now that we are done until training camp. So always good to have you on the Power Hour.
Yeah, appreciate it, man. You take care. Appreciate everybody tuning in.
TD, great stuff as always. Coming up next, I heard something today that it absolutely set me off, and I know that me being set off is going to set off some of you all in the opposite direction. We're going to get to that next. Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.